turn to Psalm 46, psalm that we've preached from many times, Psalm 46. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore will not we fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof, Selah. There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. The heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice, the earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah. Come, behold the works of the Lord. What desolations he hath made in the earth. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow, cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah. From the inscription of the psalm, we see that it was submitted to the sons of Korah, which was a family of Levitical singers. We see also that it is a song upon Alamoth, which is some type of musical instrument. We're not told the author. We're not told the circumstances under which the psalm was written. We're not told the time. None of these are specified. Which, of course, has led many to speculate as to the author, as to the circumstances, as to the time. So I got to wondering what many commentators would say concerning the author, the circumstances, and the time. And there's many different speculations out there. But the thing that I noticed is that all of those speculations, they're all relevant. That is, they very well could be. Which to me is a testimony to the relevancy of the psalm. What we read here is not limited to a single person. It's not limited to a certain set of circumstances. It's not limited to a certain time frame. It's relevant. It's a psalm that we can claim for ourselves at all times. From the language of the psalm, it appears to have been written during a time of extreme difficulty. God is referred to as our refuge, which of course is suggestive of personal storm, danger, and need. He's referred to as our strength, which is suggestive of personal weakness and inability. He is referred to as our help, suggesting the personal need of assistance, relief, and supply. You also see the word trouble, though the specifics of the trouble are not specified. It can be anything. It can be physical, emotional, mental, spiritual. It can take the many different forms, but the trouble is not specified. In verses 2 and 3, the psalmist illustrates the way that trouble can come and also illustrates the severity of the trouble. And he begins with the most frightening and catastrophic natural disasters imaginable. An earthquake. So severe that the mountains slip into the sea. That is a picture of that which is sudden. It is a picture of a time when there's really nothing that you can do. And if you're in an earthquake, I got news for you, there's not a whole lot you can do. The mountains start falling into the ocean. Where are you going to go? There's not much. There's nothing you can do. He also speaks of the force and the fury of a storm and flood there in verses 2 and 3. Our attention is drawn in those verses to the earth and the mountains. It says, though the earth be removed, though the mountains be carried into the sea. But again, our attention is drawn to the earth and the mountains. Things that appear to be immutable. Things that appear to be stable. They represent the things that we think we can count on. But yet, in verses 2 and 3, they're moved. Which speaks of the instability of every earthly hiding place. They're all unstable. The earth and the mountains moved as an image of great upheaval. It's an image of disturbance, conveying the idea of turbulence and pandemonium. And again, the earth being removed and the mountains slipping into the sea, there's going to be pandemonium. Speaks of chaos. Speaks of great change. It's really a picture of everything falling apart. Everything is falling apart. The earth and the mountains moved. The lesson being that, again, there's nothing in the world that we can ultimately and finally find our confidence or our safety or our security. The earth and the mountains move suggest a crisis, a critical point, a disaster, a calamity. It is a picture of dire straits, something very frightening. In verse 5, speaking of Jerusalem, which is a reference to God's people, she shall not be moved. Now think about that a while. It's not our message, but think about that. The earth removed, the mountains are moved, but God's people are not moved. That's amazing. But the fact that she shall not be moved is suggestive of a threat. Verse 6, we read, the heathen raged. That is, they roared. Speaking of the agitation and the fury and the wrath and the outrage and the resentment of the ungodly. We also see the kingdoms were moved, conveying the idea of violence, conveying the idea of overthrow. In verse 9, we read of wars, battle and struggle. We read of the spear and the chariot, emblems of the power and the force of the enemy. And in verse 10 again, we read of the heathen. And then we read God saying, I will be exalted. Suggested that God was being discredited by the heathen, that God was being dishonored by the heathen. So the setting of the psalm, though we do not know the exact circumstances, the setting of the psalm, without a doubt, is one of crisis. And the psalmist is probably in the middle of this. And it's at this time that he writes the 46th Psalm, in which his entire focus is upon the Lord. I want to speak this morning on the God of crisis and critical times. First of all, consider the writer of the psalm. Again, we don't know who it was, but reading the psalm, we do know many things about him. First of all, he begins and he ends the psalm with the fact of God. This 46th psalm is the writing of an individual who was living his life focused upon God. It opens with an acknowledgement of God and his benefit to us and our need of him, there in verse 1. In verse 2, we have the words of one who is living his life impacted by God. He says, therefore, based upon what he said in verse 1, we will not we fear. And then in verses 2 and 3, you have the words of one living his life with faith in God concerning the daily happenings of his life. But in verse 1, the words God is. And then in verses 2 and 3, you have the fourfold usage of the word though. God is though. God is though. Four times. And it really establishes the theme of the psalm, which is the conviction of the psalmist, whatever happens, come what may, as you put whatever you want on the other side of though, God is. And he is who he is. God is, and he is who he is. In verse 4, you have the words of one living their life enjoying God. They're living their life refreshed by God. Also in verse 4, the psalm reiterates his conviction concerning God. He refers to him as the Most High. In other words, God is more than whatever comes. Whatever comes, God is the Most High. Whatever comes, God is more than whatever it is that comes. This was the conviction of the psalmist. In verse 5, we have the words of one who's living his life aware of the protecting and enabling presence of God. In verses 6, verse 8, and verse 9, you have the words of one reflecting upon the triumphs of God. He talks about what God has done. He maketh wars to cease. He breaketh. He talks about what God has done. So again, he sees God as a reality in his life. So what you have here is an individual who recognizes the overpowering fact of God in his life. He recognizes the existence, the reality, the certainty of God. And therefore he writes in a tone of certainty. There's a tone of joy. There's a calm. As you read through that psalm, you do not see anxiety, you see calm. I mean, the earth is being removed, the mountains are being carried into the sea. The storm is raging, the floods. And yet there's a sense of calm. There's encouragement. There's also a robust defiance of the crisis. And it's all based upon who God is. That ought to be our life. He writes in praise to God. He writes with a tone of worship and adoration and reverence for God. There's faith in God. There's assurance in God. And again, this is in the midst of catastrophe. This is in the midst of a crisis. That ought to be our life. We also see here there's a feeling of strength. There's a feeling of security. There's a feeling of peace and refreshment and victory. There's conviction. There's courage. And there's energy of soul. Such ought to be the sense of our life as well. In verse 2, based upon who and what God is, he says, therefore, will not we fear, though, followed by a catastrophe. He is saying, even while all this other stuff is happening, there's a lot of stuff happening in our lives today. Even while everything that you might humanly trust in is not working, and everything around us is falling apart, he says, we'll not fear. Now that's an unnatural response. When everything is falling apart, the natural human response is fear. When the earth is being removed and the mountains are being carried into the sea, the natural response is to be afraid. But the psalmist says, will not fear. So this is a man who lived above the natural. Lived above the normal. Too often God's people, the response of God's people is the natural response. The normal response that you would expect to see from anybody. That should not be so. The natural response is to be afraid. A state of anxiety. But the psalmist says, will not fear. Will not fear. He was living above the natural and the normal. So you get an idea of the person of the psalmist. But notice, more importantly, God in this psalm. He's everywhere in this psalm. Everything said of God in this psalm must be viewed in the light of the crisis, the disruption, the turbulence, the pandemonium, and the change that is illustrated in verses 2 and 3. So notice what is said of God. He begins in verse 1 by declaring that God is absolute. God is. God is. Is there ever a time when that is not so? God is. And He is who He is. Verse 5, we see it again. God is. Verse 7, verse 11, you see it again. The Lord of hosts is, twice, once in verse 7, once in verse 11. And then also verse 7, 11, twice. the God of Jacob is. So six times it is emphatically declared that God is. That is an exhaustive statement. That is an all-inclusive statement. That is a statement without bounds. That is a statement without limits. It is fathomless. It is perpetual. It is infinite. It is everlasting. God is. So the psalmist is directing our attention away from the catastrophic happenings of verses 2 and 3 to the absoluteness of God. And then we hear God say in verse 10, I am God, which is just a reaffirmation of God is. I am God. So what we read in verses 2 and 3 has no effect upon the being of God. And whatever is going on in your life, and whatever will go on in your life, has no effect on the being of God. No matter what is happening, He is. And though it all seems to be falling apart, He is. Notice also, verse 4, He's referred to as the Most High. That is, He's the most lofty. He's the most elevated. There's nothing equivalent to God. There's nothing higher ranking than God. He is the most prominent. He is the most influential. He is the most powerful. In other words, He is simply more than whatever you want to put on the other side of though in verses 2 and 3. He is the most high. He is the most high. It is a statement that God is sovereign. God does as He pleases. God does as He pleases, where He pleases, upon whom He pleases, and when He pleases. And none can prevent Him from doing so. And that's not bad news, that's good news. God does as He pleases. God declares this, Isaiah 14, 24. He says, surely, as I have thought, so shall it come to pass. And as I have purposed, so shall it stand. So shall. Whatever I have thought, so shall. Whatever I have purposed, so shall. In other words, it's going to happen. No one can stop it. Isaiah 14, 27. For the Lord of hosts hath purposed. Who shall disannul it? Who can do away with what God has purposed? His hand is stretched out. Who shall turn it back? God stretches out His hand to do something. Do you think for a moment that your puny will is going to prevent God's almighty hand from doing what He wants to do? I don't think so. You take a little infant, you put your hand out there, and you can that infant move your hand? No, it would be foolish to think so. If you're determined that your hand's going to stay there no matter how much force that infant applies, it's not going to move your hand. God's almighty hand is not going to be turned back. He will do what He purposes. Notice in Isaiah 46, these are familiar verses. Isaiah 46, verses 9 through 11. Remember the former things of old, for I am God, there is none else. I am God, there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning, from ancient times, the things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure. Calling a ravenous bird from the east, the man that executeth my counsel from a far country. Yea, I have spoken it, I will also bring it to pass. I have purposed it, I will also do it. Paul, speaking of all this in Ephesians 1, verse 11, says, according to the purpose of Him who worketh all things after the counsel of His own will. What about the will of man, who worketh all things after the counsel of his own will? Believe it or not, God's will is stronger than man's will. God is sovereign. Nebuchadnezzar was brought to the realization of this unshakable truth in Daniel 4 and verse 35. He said, all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. And He doeth according to His will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. And none can stay His hand. God is sovereign. God rules over all. God, He is a God of absolute dominion. And this is stated in verse 7 and verse 11 of our text. In those words, the Lord of hosts. He is the Lord of hosts. Doesn't matter what the host is. He is the Lord of hosts. In other words, He has all authority. He has all control. He reigns supreme. And nothing can overtake Him. Nothing can overturn or shake His reign. It is declared in Psalm 103 and verse 19. The Lord hath prepared His throne in the heavens. His kingdom ruleth over all. Whoever the United States elects as their next president does not change this. His kingdom ruleth over all. God is sovereign. He presides. He prevails over all. He is king. There's nothing beyond His dominion. There's nothing beyond His control. And this is so in the midst of crisis. He is also referred to there in verses 7 and 11 as the God of Jacob. That might be my favorite title of God. The God of Jacob. Never do you read the God of Moses, the God of Joshua, the God of Solomon. You don't read those words. He was their God, of course, but you don't read those words. But 25 times, the God of Jacob. And 3 times, the mighty God of Jacob. 28 times all total. The God of Jacob. Why is that? Because of all the characters in the Bible, we best identify with Jacob. God, or Jacob, was a user. Jacob was a usurper. Jacob was a deceiver. Jacob was a very selfish individual. Jacob was a conniver. He was a schemer. He was a pretender. He was one who insisted upon his own way. He was a resister of God. He was a man who was always working the angles to his own benefit. But then you have this phrase, the God of Jacob. That tells us that he's a God of grace. He's a God of mercy. He's a God of love. The God of Jacob is the God of election. The God of Jacob is the one who exercises his own will and shows himself to be the Most High God in the life of Jacob. The God of Jacob is a God of patience. The God of Jacob is a God of compassion. The God of Jacob is the God who meets the sinner, not to destroy him, but to bless him. The God of Jacob is the one who goes to great lengths to make something of that sinner. To make something of that sinner. The God of Jacob is the one who can overhaul lives. The God of Jacob is the one who transforms lives. It speaks of the transforming power of the Lord. He's the one who reveals himself to the sinner. The God of Jacob is the one who can bring the sinner to the end of their resources, just as he did with Jacob, into a position of surrender. The God of Jacob is the one who gives the sinner new beginnings. Oh, what a blessed title! The God of Jacob. That's why I rejoice. God loved Jacob. That's astounding. It's not a mystery that God hated Esau. The mystery is God loved Jacob. That's what we need to concentrate on. Oh, how we ought to rejoice that He is the God of Jacob. Thanks be unto God that when we are conscious of the filth and the weight and the vileness and the shame of our sin, He's the God of Jacob. When we feel unworthy, He's the God of Jacob. When we fail time and time again and constantly revert back to what we were, He's the God of Jacob. That means He's suitable to the unworthy. The God of Jacob. And in the hour of personal crisis, remember this. He's the God of Jacob. He's the God of Jacob. He's also referred to the Lord of hosts. He is the God of Jacob. And the God of Jacob is the Lord of hosts. And this is so in the midst of upheaval and disturbance and disruption. Again, the Lord of hosts is the God of Jacob. The God of Jacob is the Lord of hosts. And as you see in this psalm, He is with us. Verse 1, we read that He is very present. He's very present. That word very means extremely. He's extremely present. He's exceedingly present. He's present in an extraordinary and abundant and remarkable way. This God, this Lord of hosts, this God of Jacob, says he's present in trouble. That is, he's right in the trouble. In verse 5, it says God is in the midst of her. In verse 7 and verse 11, the Lord of hosts is with us. His presence is greater than the upheaval. His presence is greater than the disruption, greater than the turbulence, greater than the pandemonium, greater than the change, and greater than the crisis. Of verse 2 and 3. The Most High, the Lord of hosts, the God of Jacob, He is with us. And notice, He is with us as our refuge. That's what it says in verse 1. God is our refuge. And in verse 7 and verse 11, the God of Jacob is our refuge. So in the midst of the crisis, the God of Jacob, who is the Lord of hosts, who is the Most High, in the very midst of the crisis, He's our protection. He's our hiding place. He's our safety. He's our supply. He is our refuge. That speaks of His availability. A refuge is of no use if it's not available. If you can't get to it, it's of no use. He is our refuge. He's available to us. I am Jacob. And God is available to me. And I have access to Him. And He is our refuge. And our refuge is as sure and reliable as He is. That's why we read, "She shall not be moved." Oh, the earth is removed. The mountains are carried into the sea. But God's people shall not be moved, because they have this refuge that's as sure as He is. The Most High, the Lord of hosts, the God of Jacob, our refuge. He is with us. But notice also, He is with us as our strength. Verse 1, God is our strength. What is strength? Well, it's the active energy and power. God is the active energy and power that operates in our behalf. Therefore, we will not fear. He is the one who gives us power. He is the one who gives us vigor and stamina in our weakness and frailty. To the point, again in verse 5, that we shall not be moved. In the midst of all the upheaval of verses 2 and 3, in the midst of all the pandemonium and chaos and change and crisis, in the midst of the dire straits of verses 2 and 3, in the midst of that which is frightening and threatening, in the midst of the fury and the wrath and the outrage and the resentment of the heathen, God Almighty is our strength. It doesn't get better than that. The Most High, the Lord of hosts, the God of Jacob, our refuge, our strength, He is with us. But notice, He is with us as our help in trouble. Again, the word trouble is not qualified. Doesn't matter what trouble you're talking about. He is our help. And all we need help. We need help. He is our help. That speaks of His readiness. It speaks of His ability on our behalf. There may be someone willing to help you, someone ready to help you, but they don't have the ability to help you. Well, that's not a lot of use to you. But He's ready, and He has the ability to help. And again, this is in the midst of the crisis of verses 2 and 3. He is our help. He's our aid. He's our support. He's our sustainer. He is the one who can alleviate. He is the one who can bring relief. We're weak. We're fragile. We're inadequate. We're insufficient. In and of ourselves, we need help. And He's our help. He's our help. Everything around us can be collapsing. Everything around us can be falling apart. But we can absolutely be certain God is. God is. And He is with us. And He's our refuge. And He's our strength. And He's our help. Also, as you read this psalm, you see God is working. In verse 5, you read the words, God shall. Future. In verse 6, He uttered His voice. In verse 8, the works of the Lord. Verse 8 also, He hath made. Verse 9, He maketh, He breaketh, and cutteth, He burneth. And in verse 10, He says, I will be. You see, all throughout, God is working. In the past, the present, and the future. Which is a declaration that God is no distant spectator. Thank God, He is not some distant spectator with His hands tied by the whims of the puny will of man. That's not God. That's not God. He is a God who is able. He is a miracle-working God. You see, we need to be more convinced of the reality of God than we are the stuff around us and the stuff that is before us. The stuff around us is very real. It's very real. There's no denying that. But we need to be more convinced of the reality of God than we are all the stuff, all the crisis. Oh, that we would live our lives knowing that in the midst of all that seems to be falling apart, in the midst of dire straits, in the critical hour, in the midst of that which is frightening, in the midst of all the threats, and all the fury, and all the wrath, and all the outrage, and resentment, and agitation of the ungodly, God is, and He is with us. And He is with us as what we need. Our refuge, our strength, our help. You may have a personal time in your life when it seems like the earth is being removed. And really, it's a blessing when the most stable things in life are removed, because it serves as a reminder. Don't depend upon the earth. Don't depend upon the mountains. God is. So you may be experiencing a time when the earth seems to be removed and the mountains carried into the sea, and the waters roar and are troubled, and the mountains shake. But can you see? Can you sense the God of Psalm 46? That's what makes the difference. God is not out of business. He's not going out of business. God has no weakness. Our God is able. We need to trust Him. We need to lean upon Him. Put everything upon the Lord. Because He can. He can. Read Psalm 46 over and over. What a blessed way to live life. Here in Psalm 46. You may be experiencing, again, verse 2 and 3. You may be experiencing that. Those things happen. There are times in our life when it seems like all that which is stable is being shaken. We're at that point in our country, have been for a while. But God is. God is. And He's no less than He's ever been. He is. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song. Let's all stand, Brother Larry, lead us in singing. 177.